Welcome to the Mr. Vincent Podcast, episode 119. I'm your host, Emmanuel Vincent, and I hope everybody's week has been good thus far, as we almost are at the finish line, aka Friday. The weekend is upon us, so I hope everybody is getting ready to do something productive and have some fun. Of course, enjoy the great weather. This episode focuses on the NBA playoffs, of course, with the conference finals in the way. A rematch from the bubble in both conferences. We are coming off of game one of the Eastern Conference Finals last night, in which the Heat did go into the TD Garden and defeat the Celtics. I talk about that, what I saw, what I took away from that game, and what I see as going on as the series progresses. And then I also did preview the Lakers and Nuggets game two, which take place tonight, in which the Nuggets were 1-0 after beating the Lakers in game one on Tuesday night. I also did touch on Victor Wembanyama, as the San Antonio Spurs did win the draft lottery the other night, and whether or not he is the best prospect of all time, and will he live up to the hype? That is coming your way, and we can actually get into it right now. Here it is. All right, so the Heat took game one of the Eastern Conference Finals over the Celtics last night. Good game overall. I was kind of mad I couldn't watch the last 4 to 5 minutes of the game due to the outage that was the error that was going on with YouTube TV. I thought it was my internet at first, so I was gone. And then come to find out, I see everybody on my timeline and they're complaining about the same thing. So there was definitely an issue on their end, but I was able to catch the highlights of the end of the game. And I mean, I'm not surprised that Miami was able to pull this one off, because they are extremely well coached. They have been there before. Jimmy Buckets is a gamer. I joked yesterday after the game, I put on Twitter that I swear that if he could, he would skip the whole season and just play in the postseason. And I actually do believe that he would do that, because he just steps his game up to another level, like a notch or two above in the playoffs, which is kind of makes it hard for me to rank him where he falls at in the league. I've always held a firm belief that he's top 15, top 20, but it's just like when he plays in the playoffs, he looks like he's top 12, top 10. I mean, he definitely has that swagger and that confidence of a top 10, top 12 player. And that's very vital for Miami, because I've always felt like what's lacking with them when it comes to the Celtics is the fact that Boston just has so much offense, especially with Tatum and Brown, that would Miami Heat be able to combat that over the duration of a series? We've seen last year how that series went down to the wire, like literally game seven, about 15, 20 minutes left, where the missed three-point attempt by Jimmy Buckets ultimately determined that series, and Boston, of course, moved on to play Golden State in the NBA Finals. But yeah, this series is tough. I have no idea who's going to win either series, because I feel like I can make a case for both teams in both series to come out in advance onto the NBA Finals. But I do think that regardless, it's going to go 6-7 games. I know it's a cop-out. That's the same way I felt last year with the Celtics and Heat last year. I didn't really want to pick, but I said that last year I would probably lean towards Boston just because of the duo of Tatum and Brown. I think that they make a slight difference that tips the scale into the Celtics' favor. But this game, in the beginning, it just looked like it was the seized game to have, honestly. I mean, the first thing I noticed when I was watching the game is, why is Robert Williams starting right now? He don't really have anybody. No, they don't have anybody like Joel Embiid, who's able to dominate on the block, score with his back to the basket, who has the size and girth that they would need Robert Williams to start with to help combat that. But as the game slowly progressed, you've seen Robert Williams taking advantage on the offensive glass, getting putbacks and then catching alley oops. So just basically taking advantage of the Heat's small front line. So it made sense there. And then in the second quarter, it looks like the Seas were just going on a run. Marcus Smart looking like Magic Johnson out there, finding players in transition, alley-oops. He was really putting forth a good effort of distributing the basketball and getting his teammates involved. So With that, looking at the halftime, it looked like it was the Cavs game to win. But then third quarter came, and Heat just essentially flipped the switch. They did a way better job of containing the dribble penetration. They was getting killed in that aspect of the game, especially in the second quarter, where they really just couldn't stay in front of anybody. I mean, Tatum Brown was able to get to the basket essentially at will, and they did a good job of cutting that off. And then taking advantage of Jimmy Buckets was coming up with some big shots in the third. Bam was playing more aggressive and looking to score. That's my one knock on Bam, is the fact that he doesn't really look to get his doesn't really look for his offense that much. I mean, we know how great he is on defense, but I feel like he can help open up a new dimension for the Heat offense if he was to look to be more aggressive. And he has a talent, but it just looked like he just kind of settles a little bit. But he was really aggressive, and I think in the broadcast, I believe it was Reggie Miller last night saying that in order for them, or it could have been Stan, I can't remember. They were saying that he's going to have to average at least around 20, 21, 23 points a game in order for them to realistically have a chance at winning the series, and I really do believe that. So it was good to see him being aggressive in the third quarter, and this juice was coming up big with some huge buckets as well. Kevin Love hit a three. And then in the third quarter, so it's like the momentum has shifted to Miami's favor. Then in the fourth quarter, we've seen some sequence in the Celtics: a three by White, followed by a block by Rob Williams, and then a bucket by Malcolm Brogdon after Caleb Martin has tried to take a charge, but he definitely flopped, and he's able to finish at the cup. Glad the ref didn't call a foul on that one, because that's been a whole issue this postseason, flopping. It's been egregious this far. So I was glad they didn't call that. But then, so at that point, this something started the fourth quarter off on a 7-0 run. And it looked like, hey, Boston's going to come out here and win game one. But then shortly after, the Heat got in their groove. Some costly turnovers on the Celtics side. And then here we are, with Miami Heat essentially escaping game one with a victory and going up 1-0 in the series, overcoming a 13-point deficit, which is the same thing that they did last year in game one. Coincidentally, they were able to pull that off. So this series, I think, is going to go back and forth, back and forth. I just really don't know where to go. But if you're Boston, you are a little concerned about this issue that's reoccurring with these costly turnovers, and then also your superstar player really not looking to be aggressive in the fourth quarter, Jason Tatum. I mean, I think that it's really neck and neck as to who is the best player on the Celtics in terms of Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown. I think that Tatum has a higher ceiling, however, so I see why people tend to lean towards Tatum. But I think it's like nip and tuck right there. But hey, it is what it is. Tatum is the superstar of the team. He's the franchise player. He's got to be a little bit more aggressive on offense, looking to get a shot, especially in the fourth quarter. And especially after coming off an epic game seven performance in which he dropped 51 on Mother's Day, the most points ever in a game seven in NBA history. So you would think that he would want to carry that momentum into game one and just looking to be aggressive and look for a shot, especially when it matters most. But he didn't do that. And then these Miami Heat are different. I feel like they are, while they're not talented, more talented than the Boston Celtics, they are more consistent in their effort, in their hustle, in their execution. Credit to Coach Spo and, of course, that culture that's been established down there in Miami. I think that goes a long way as to why I think that they can possibly pull this off. But if I had to pick, I would have picked Boston, because I didn't pick any team to win in this series, nor in the series in the Western Conference, because I feel like I can make a great case for both. I know that's a cop out, but I think it's that close between in both series that either team can advance and represent the respective conference in the NBA Finals. But yeah, Boston's gonna have to shore that up. I mean, they brought Malcolm Brogdon here for that to help stabilize that offense, especially in crunch time. But I'm seeing same things repeated that I saw last year in the postseason. They were really sloppy with the ball in game seven last year when that series came down to the wire, and they did, and they just got by the skin of their teeth, able to advance and get past Miami to go to the NBA Finals. And we saw that obviously that flaw be exposed by Golden State in the finals. So I'm just looking for them to, pick it up on pick it up and tighten up their ball handles. I would think you would probably have the ball more in Malcolm Brogdon's hands to start in the clutch. Marcus was I'm especially in the second half. I mean, in the second in the first half rather, really good at distributing the basketball, looking like Magic Johnson out there for a little bit. Not sure you can really rely on that for the rest of the series, but he did have a great outing in that department in game one. Jimmy Butler was just amazing. I mean, I really don't know how to explain Jimmy Butler. He's one of the hardest players I would have to rank in my life of watching basketball in terms of the way he fits in the current NBA. Out of respect, I always say he's top 15, top 20 in the NBA, just because we see him always take it up another level in the postseason, which is it's just crazy. I joked yesterday after the game on Twitter saying that I really think that he just Jimmy Butler that is he would if he could would just skip the regular season and just play in the postseason if he could because it's just like he's just like built for that moment, built for the postseason. And you can't tell me that that isn't true, especially what we've seen in the last three, four postseason runs that he's been on. Been to what three Eastern Conference Finals appearances, one NBA Finals appearance. What he did to Milwaukee in Game One. This isn't your typical AFC team. I feel like I know they've had some issues in the postseason, but this Heat team is not your traditional AFC team. Which is why anybody shouldn't be, any Bostonians, any Celtics fans should not be surprised at what transpired last night. This team is built for this, and they aren't scared. They're not going to go away. It's going to be a tough battle through and through. And clearly, coaching advantage has to be on the Miami Heat side. But yeah, this is going to be a tough one to call. I think for game two, they're gonna want to look to get Tatum more involved. Well, he was involved in the first. They were able to get penetration, especially in the first half. Able to get to the rack at will. Him, Jaylen Brown, Brogdon was able to do that as well. But Miami did toughen up in that department and kind of cut that off in the third quarter. And Boston wasn't getting as many easy looks as they were getting before that. And that led to obviously some good output, some shooting by Bam. Well, Bam was being aggressive down low on the block. That's always great to see. Caleb Martin, Kevin Love, Jimmy Buckets. Kyle Lowry was even big off the bench. I'm surprised that he is actually looking this good. I think that him being in Miami for an extra year has actually got him helped kind of rejuvenate him because, guards at his age, what he's been in the league since like he came in the 06 draft. So he's been in the league for at least 15, 16 seasons. Probably 15, I would say, I think. So it's been quite a while since he's been in the league. And guards usually don't last that long in the league, especially now with the way the game's played. That was so quick. And fast pace, but I just feel like this he looks better health wise. So I would think that that would have to do with him being down there in Miami, having another year in that environment, in that culture, and they've just really done a good job of helping him get his body ready for this moment because he's looking like he turned at the hand of the clock about 2 to 3 years, I would say. So that's good, but yeah, this series is gonna be. I think this series very well may come down to just execution and decision making. And I really think that Miami leads them in that department. They're ahead of them. I now credit that to Spo, who is obviously arguably the best coach in basketball right now. In many eyes, he is the best coach. Going to get up against a rookie coach in Joe Mazzulla, who's still looking to prove himself. While he has done it, has helped kind of like silence the naysayers thus far. The job isn't finished yet. Boston is looking to get back to where they were last year and finish the job and get that 18 minute raise in TD Garden. So it's going to be interesting to see what adjustments are made by the Celtics. And Domo's going to have a tough a tough job to do with that and come back with Bosa has thrown on them this far because it has worked. It's just going to be interesting to see. I can't wait. We will see. Again, I would probably still, I'm still going to probably, even though I said it very well may come down to execution and decision making, I still have a tough time seeing Boston lose the series. If I had to pick, I would probably pick the Celtics just because I think that Tatum and Brown are two of the arguably the best duo in basketball. Two long, big wings who can essentially get their shot up against this defense. Especially against anybody that they have to throw at them. The Heat on the perimeter, I think that they can get this shot up relatively easy, cleaner looks than it would have got last year. Because remember, last year they had PJ Tucker, and he was a primary defensive player on Tatum last year. Now with him gone, who else do they really have? Like what Caleb Martin, Strus, I don't think that they can really do a good job of guarding Jason Tatum. Heat defense would have to be on committee to slow down Tatum and Brown, which they can certainly do because the effort's there. It's just a matter of executing and being determined to stop them from scoring at will. And it's going to be tough, but I would probably get a slight edge to Boston in that department. I love the fact that I see from the gate Jimmy Butler gunning Tatum in the first quarter. I probably think that helps set the tone for the series. That even though Jimmy is being asked a lot to carry the load offensively, and then he's still willing to take the assignment of guarding the best player on the Celtics on the offensive side of the basketball. I love that. I don't know if he'll, I don't know how long you can't really ask him to do that for the majority of the game. You want to be able to save him, to save his energy, so he can give you some production on the offensive end. But every now and then you can put him on spurts, put him on Tatum, put him on Brown. You can go that route. It's not going to be a problem. So game two will be on tomorrow. I believe it's going to be tomorrow in Boston. How Boston is going to respond is going to be crucial. It's going to be crucial. I think you will learn a lot about this series after tomorrow. So I think that Boston, however, will win game two and will head to Miami tied up one game apiece. That's what I'm at. That's where I'm at where right now. But wait, I will be right back to talk more about these Western Conference. Well, sorry, these playoffs, and move on to the Western Conference matchup between the Lakers and Nuggets. So, game two between the Lakers and Nuggets is tonight in about 4.5 hours. Nuggets up 1-0 in the series after a 132-126 victory on Tuesday night. Nuggets went virtually in control of the whole game, 3 quarters in until Darvin Ham made an adjustment that we all have heard of by now and that we saw if you didn't watch the game, in which he elected to take Anthony Davis off of Jokic and put Rui Hachimura on him, which will allow AD to be sort of a free safety to come off the help. And that was definitely a smart move by Darvin Ham because AD isn't really suitable to be at his best as an on-ball defender. He's better in a help position with his length and his activity. He can disrupt them. There were a few plays in which he was able to disrupt Jokic and which caused turnovers and Lakers, a lot of Lakers to get in the transition and do their thing. Because they almost came back and won the game after being down by as much as 21, 23 points in that game. So it's going to be interesting to see what's going to transpire in game two. My thought is that they are going to elect to start Rui Hachimura after that after Darvin Ham unlocked that matchup. I think I seen last about half an hour ago that they are thinking about it. My guess is that it's going to be official around game time. It'll be announced that Rui will get the start and he'll be matched up on Joker, which would mean most likely, I would say, D'Angelo Russell will be coming off the bench because his play has been rather sporadic this postseason. When he's able to score about 18 to 20 points, they have a great record. Whereas if he doesn't, they virtually lose every time when he scores like roughly about 8, 10 points. So he was really essentially a non-factor on the last game. So I think that if they do indeed start Rui, they're going to elect to have D'Angelo come off the bench. Nuggets were very very good from the jump in game one. They were able to get out in transition. They were more active, more lively. I think that the home crowd advantage has something to do with that. This is the first time that they ever had the number one seed in the entire history of the franchise. So you can imagine how the fans in Denver will be up for that game, and you know the atmosphere will be rocking and so forth. And then obviously there is the altitude, which is really a real issue. I've never experienced it because I've never been to Denver, but from everything I hear, you do notice it. And I think that that may have played a factor with the Lakers getting off to that sluggish start, whereas obviously the Nuggets play there, so they're accustomed to it. Because the Lakers did look kind of sloppy, and the Joker was just virtually doing everything he essentially wanted in that first half. I mean, he had a first half for the ages in that game. He just looked like, honestly, I think I texted one of my boys. I said, you know what? I think Joker could really, you could really make a case for him being the best player in the league right now. And I don't think that that's hyperbole to say. I mean, he is coming off two MVP seasons prior to this year, and was done Joel Embiid was awarded that honor. But he was definitely in very much in the conversation all year, and there was supposed a push for him to win a third one. Now, I wasn't really a fan of Joker's first two MVPs. The first one, I understand why he got it for. I felt like Embiid probably would have got it if he played enough games, because and that was the shortest season. It was only 72 games, and Embiid only played 50 out of 72, where Joker played 72 out of 72 games. So I felt like, yeah, you should definitely give it to him because the amount of games you played has to account for something, and we see that now with the new CBA that's about to kick in which you have to be eligible for certain awards, you have to play X amount of games. I believe it's 65. And then the year two, rather the second year that Joker won the league MVP, they were a sixth seed. Now I know Jamal Murray was out all year, and Michael Porter Jr. basically only played 9 games that season. But I was just like, I just think it's just a bad look when a sixth seed is awarded that'll work, and they usually give it to teams who are like top two, top three in their respective conference. One of the exceptions was Russell Westbrook when he had that triple double season in 15-16, and I said back then, well, I understand why you're giving Russ that award because he did something that we thought would never be done again, averaging a triple double in a season. You're setting a bad precedent now because now all the players in the future would be able to win that award as a lower seed in their conference. So that was my knock about Joker winning that award. But if he won it this year, I felt like that would have, and if he did win it 3 consecutive years in a row, that one would hold the most weight to me if he was, because he was great this season. And a lot of players aren't going to be familiar with him nor his game, at least the casual NBA fans, because they're not prime time. His game isn't really like appealing to the eye. He's not flashy. He's just so methodical and just one of the most highest IQs I want to say I've ever seen. Although he might go down on that list when his career is all said and done, but certainly right now he's at the probably at the very very top of the list. Easily the best passing center I've ever seen in my life, and I think that he can go down as a top seven center of all time. Because for me, it's really really tough. I feel like it's tough to me to put any centers in the top five because I really think that that's solidified. No particular order. We got Russell, Kareem, Wilt, Shaq, Olajuwon. I really don't see any centers going past those groups, those five right there. But I think Joker can be right on the outside, 7-6 possibly when his career is all said and done. And I think that if you needed if I needed anything to support my case for Joker being ranked that high when it's all said and done, look no further than game one and what he was able to do. 3 quarters, he was magnificent. He couldn't really miss. He's making the right play. He was catching the defense that was helping and finding the cutter to the basket, running the break. It was just amazing. Him and Jamal Murray's action was just virtually unstoppable. The Lakers didn't know what to do, and the Nuggets was hitting threes from all over the place, like KCP, Michael Porter Jr. They were active from the 3-point line. Bruce Brown was a spark plug off the bench. I really, really liked that signing in the offseason. It was a sleeper.
I really couldn't believe that Brooklyn didn't try to hold on to him harder. Not really sure about that the whole contract situation, but I thought last year during their run to the postseason, he was probably the third most important player after KD and Kyrie. So when I seen that Denver was able to get him in the offseason, I said that's a sneaky pickup, and a lot of people weren't talking about it that much. And we seen, and you can see what he was doing, why he was important inside for them. After watching game one, he was just really like having his way at the rim. He was taking advantage of the matchup he had with D'Angelo Russell. But the Lakers did, like as I mentioned, they did find some things that worked well for them in that game. Again, putting looking to have AD as like a free safety and having Rui Hachimura on Jokic. Looks like it would be better served for the Lakers to go that route as opposed to having AD matched up on them all game. Well, so but they're probably not gonna have Rui on him for a majority of the game. I think you gotta throw for a player like Joker, with his high level IQ, you wanna give him different looks. So yeah, you can have AD on him here and there sporadically, but you don't wanna have him or garner him for the majority of the game. Maybe you even possibly put LeBron on him. And people forget too. When the Lakers did play, this is the bubble rematch as well as the series in the Eastern Conference Finals. When they did play them in 2020 in the bubble, the Lakers had a lot of options, a lot of legit options to throw at Nikola Jokic. You had Dwight Howard was on the roster, JaVale McGee was on the roster. So those guys were able to, you could lead away with like 2 to 3 fouls a piece between those two. And then he got AD, who can just be the help defense. But that's really not the case anymore. So it's going to be very, very critical that AD not get in foul trouble in this, at any point in the series. Because if he does, they don't really have another option to that can legitimately contest the moves that Nikola Jokic will be making at the basket. So it's going to be very critical for them to have AD on the court, and vice versa too. I would say for Nikola Jokic, because the Nuggets are pretty small after him. They really only have two legit bigs on their roster, that being Nikola Jokic and AD. AD had a great game in game one. Can he duplicate that in game two? Well, not necessarily duplicate that, because that's a lot to ask. But can he have another great game in game two? We've seen that he's kind of been kind of sporadic these playoffs. So he would give you a great game, then he have a lackluster game that follows up. So it's going to be very important for him to really stay aggressive and have that mindset, because Denver really doesn't have anybody that can match up with him, kind of like with Golden State. And obviously too, LeBron is, in year 20, and he is dealing with the injury too, with the foot injury that will require surgery in the offseason. So it's going to be very important that AD be able to handle the burden that's going to be placed on his shoulder tonight and throughout the rest of the series. I don't want to say it's really a must-win for LA, but it kind of feels like it is, right? Because here you unlock something, you unlock something in the series. You elected to have Rui guard Nikola Jokic. You make a comeback from being down by 20, and down virtually the entire game. You cut it into three. LeBron misses a three-pointer, in which I see a lot of people were being critical about it. I mean, listen, yes, he had Jamal Murray on him. Jamal Murray was already in foul trouble. They were exploiting that mismatch throughout the game, and Jamal Murray is just too small, not strong enough to deal with the strength that LeBron possesses. So why did LeBron just settle for a three-pointer as opposed to going to the rack? Maybe it was fatigue. Maybe it was the altitude. Maybe he just thought that that he was just confident enough that he can make that shot. He's made that shot before, so why not, right? Things happen. But who knows? But yeah, so it's gonna be a lot for the Lakers to overcome. Not necessarily overcome. This series, I really didn't have any idea. I couldn't really pick a winner from this series as well, because I thought that you could make a great case for either team as to why they're gonna win. Denver, because of their familiarity with each other and their excellent ball movement, their IQs, their highest scoring, the most proficient offense in the playoffs. And then on the other hand, you have Lakers, who have the best defense in of any team remaining in the playoffs, with the best defensive player in AD in the playoffs, and of course LeBron James in year 20, top three player of all time, just the cerebral on the basketball court. I can make a case for even these two teams. So I kind of stood away from it. I wanted to say if I had to pick a team to win this series, I probably would pick the Lakers, just because I've seen LeBron do it so many times, and he's come through, and that he's like really, really close to another NBA Finals and possibly a fifth championship. So with that being said, I probably would give the slight edge to the Lakers, but at the same time, I mean, I've watched NBA throughout this the season. I'm not a casual watcher by any means, so I know just how good Denver is and the talent that they possess, the athlete that they have on the team. So I knew that. So I knew it's very possible that they can really go on to win this series and win in the NBA Finals. For Denver, they're gonna really have to, I think, expect that they're gonna see a lot more Rui on Nikola Jokic, which means that AD is going to probably be on Aaron Gordon, but kind of be in that free safety position. So I think as opposed to having Aaron Gordon be in the dunking spot, they're going to probably want to try to get him up to the three-point line. That way, you'll take AD away from the backcourt, so he won't be in a help position. And that allows Joker to go to work. And they probably might have to bring somebody. Lakers might probably try to bring another defender over to help out. But I don't think the Lakers can really help out fully, kind of like a half help. You don't want to help too much to the fact that the player that they're helping off of, any of the help defender, is cutting to the basket. Joker's going to find them. His vision is just insane. And it'll be an easy bucket for the Nuggets at that point. If I had to pick a winner for tonight's game, I'm going to say it's going to be Denver. They're undefeated so far in the postseason at home. That is a real home court advantage that they have here. And I think that it's going to continue throughout this series. They say a series doesn't really start until the road team wins a road team wins, which I don't really get that, because let's just say if best of seven series happens and the home team wins every game, series is 4-3. Did that mean that the series didn't happen? Of course not. It did happen. So I don't really buy into that. But I do think that Denver is really, really tough to beat at home. And I just think that they are going to come out and get this victory again, because I'm not quite sure that I'm going to see the same contributions from the role players that the Lakers have, such as Rui and Austin Reeves. I don't know if they can duplicate the same performance that they had before, which is going to put a lot more on LeBron and AD's shoulders. And I think that there's a lot already on their plate already in the series. But they're going to have to play high minutes regardless in this series, that they're going to want a realistic chance to advance to the finals. And then plus high altitude. And now the series just kind of similar to the matchup against the Warriors. The games are every other day now. So will we start seeing fatigue kick in, tired legs, hard breathing, due to the high altitude? I think that that's something that we should look out for tonight and going forward throughout the rest of the series. So yeah, I think I'm rolling with Denver to win tonight, and they're gonna go back to LA down 2-0, and I think that they'll get themselves back into the series after the after game four is over. It'll be pretty much even.
All right, so I wanted to talk a little bit about Victor Wembanyama, who is actually now going to, the draft lottery already happened, and the Spurs are the first pick in the upcoming NBA draft, which is kind of crazy, because they, with the first pick in recent drafts, they've gotten David Robinson, Tim Duncan, and now they are projected to land Victor Wembanyama, who is the top prospect, people are saying, arguably one of the best prospects, and not only in the NBA history, but all of North American team sports history, which is crazy to me. I mean, I've seen him play. He is, I believe he's 7'4", 7'6", 7'4". But an amazing handle, guard-like game. Can score. He obviously can block shots. That's a lot to say. I've seen some people who are criticizing Chris Broussard for his take yesterday, saying that he has to be on the level of like Michael Jordan, LeBron James, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Shaq. Maybe he's on the level of the likes of like Kevin Durant. I think it's an Anthony Davis. That would be a failure in his eyes, basically. And I think what he meant was like based off the hype that he has coming into the league, if he doesn't live up to the hype. Because if he does live up to the hype, he'll be all-time great in the GOAT discussion, right? Probably top 5, top 10 player of all time, if he does live up to the hype. So I think that's what he was trying to get at. And obviously, I'm pretty sure when I heard the full segment, because I heard it before it got on social media and just caught it catching fire, I'm pretty sure he said he was obviously
eliminating the possibility of injuries, because injuries do happen. So he's basically saying if injuries don't occur and he doesn't live up to the hype, then it'll be a failure. I don't know if I can really say that he's the best prospect of all time in the NBA. I mean, when I think of prospect, like, what comes to my mind is LeBron James. This is crazy. He's still doing it, still playing at an elite level in year 20, which is astonishing, right? When he got into the league, entering the league in 2003, the hype was real. Now, we didn't have social media out there, but he did grace the covers of Sports Illustrated with the headline, The Chosen One. He had some games broadcasted on ESPN, high school games. And was watching him play. It just seems like, watching him play, I was like amazed. Not only at not necessarily his athletic ability, because that was off the charts as well, but I was more amazed at his vision, his ability to read the defense and just hit like his teammates in stride. Like, I was just like, yeah, man, this guy is going to be the real deal. Fast forward 20 years later, I would say that LeBron James not only lived up to the hype, he exceeded the hype. So it's going to be really, really hard for me to say that. It's going to really hard for me to think that there's a better prospect than LeBron James, because I witnessed that and seen that in time. I was in high school. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar probably should be in that conversation as well. I'm too young to remember Kareem coming to the league, but he was a beast in high school, a beast in college. So yeah, he has to be in that conversation. You can't really put Mike in that conversation because first of all, he wasn't selected number one overall, but at the same time, at that time, in the league, I believe that was the 84 draft, Mike came in. Yeah, 84 was the year Mike came in. At that time, it was believed that you could only win a lot by having a dominant big as the anchor of your team, as the centerpiece. And obviously, Mike's a shooting guard. So I think that might have played a factor too. And Akeem Olajuwon was just like the number one overall in that draft. And hey, he ain't no Sam Bowie. Akeem is a real deal, a top five center of all time in my eyes, and a top 12, 15 player of all time. So it ain't no slight, ain't nothing wrong with coming after Akeem Olajuwon. But yeah, back to Victor Wembanyama. I'm just really like excited to see him play in a league. I think that he's going to have a great season. I don't know if he'll live up to the hype. I think you got to wait a few, like at least 5 to 7 seasons to really make that assessment if he's lived up to the hype that he had. But he's in a great situation. I do think that Coach Pop is going to stay around a little bit longer than he expected after the Suns letting the number one pick. I know he's excited. He probably feels like he's rejuvenated. Let's think about how blessed, lucky an organization has to be able to land Tim Duncan and then get Victor Wembanyama. That is insane. The fortunes keep coming along for the San Antonio Spurs. But Victor, too, though, I mean, him being only concerned, knock on wood, I hope this doesn't happen. It's just possible an injury or injuries that can possibly slow down or even derail his career, because we do have seen in the past players of his size have issues, lower extremity issues, whether that's Yao Ming or Big Z, Jonas Ilgauskas. We've seen players like that, Kristaps Porzingis, who I think that he could be compared to a lot, his game. I kind of look at him like a KD blended with Kristaps, like his style of play. And those three guys did have some lower extremity issues that kind of like slowed down or even derailed their career, in the case of Yao Ming. Even KD, who was damn near 7 foot, he's had some issues before, Jones fracture, Achilles. So there's no guarantee. We have a history of the big guys getting hurt who are tall. It's kind of like where their bodies really made to play basketball, to endure the grueling and grind that is the 82-game season. But lucky for him that he is in San Antonio and they have a history of taking care of their players and managing them well, to say the least. I mean, a lot of us do look down upon the whole concept of load management. And where did load management originate? Within the San Antonio Spurs organization, when Greg Popovich started to send like Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, and Ginobili on a flight back to San Antonio. I believe they were playing Miami, and it was a primetime game. And he elected to send them back to San Antonio, and then they got fined for that. And the league has really essentially has been copying them ever since. And it's a copycat league, so what do you expect? I am really excited to see if Victor Wembanyama is how good he's going to be in the league. I think that he has potential to be one of the greatest ever. Of course, there's no denying that. But the best draft prospect of all time, I'm going to have to see it to believe it. I seen LeBron James with my own eyes. I was in real time. And I think that he's the best draft prospect that there has been, at least in my era, by far. And that is it for this episode. Thank you guys for your continued support, and thanks for checking out this episode. And if you're new to this part as well, hope you enjoyed it, and also hope you'll stick around for the journey. And if you haven't already, be sure to hit that subscribe button, and this pod is available just about everywhere you listen to your favorite pods at. That includes Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other platforms as well. You can keep up with me on social media, Instagram and Twitter at MrVincent13. You can also like my Facebook fan page as well, Emmanuel Vincent. So I'll be looking to put an episode out, the next one, regarding these conference finals on Monday. So be on the lookout for that as well, hopefully early in the morning, Monday. Till then, guys, have fun. Enjoy the weekend. Whatever you do, please, please do it responsibly. I'll catch up with y'all soon. Till next time. Take care.